Welcome to the Wednesday, August 17th, 2011 edition of the Sands and its Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Scott today wrote a diary about targeted phishing attacks. We do get a lot of reports about the sort of semi-targeted attacks, and Scott's background, of course, is higher education, so he's focusing somewhat on what he's seeing there and how to respond it. In his case, student accounts are compromised by spammers and, well, then used to send spam. So for him, mail logs, for example, are a real good indicator to check whether or not an account got compromised. User Alpha Seton sending out a lot of email, of course, is a good indication that something went wrong. In response, Scott recommends locking the user account to lock out the spammer, first of all, and then to delete the mail queue to remove unsent spam. Now, spam typically is sent to more or less random email addresses, and a lot of it will not be delivered. Those undelivered messages, of course, will stick in your queue for a few days and tie up your mail server, and well, may eventually get delivered, which you are trying to prevent. Of course, you do have to be careful not to delete any valid email, and this is definitely one of those things that specifically applies to Scott being compromised by spammers frequently. Another important note, and I think that's frequently also important for other compromised accounts, like webmail accounts like Gmail, Hotmail, and such, is to verify the email settings. For example, things like automatic copying to a second address on all email or automatic forwarding rules are really important. They could be used by the spammer to intercept communication after the account was locked and after the password was reset. Even if you don't send a new password in the email in the clear, which, of course, is a real bad idea, it may still help the spammer to regain access to the account if they can still continue to listen in on the email exchange. If you can still get a hold of the phishing scam, of course, it makes a great piece for awareness training and, of course, something to add to your mail filters. Also may help you figuring out whether or not other users in your organization got compromised. And we got a new survey live. In this survey, we are asking you about the most dangerous web applications. I mentioned this project before, and well, what we're trying to do is we're trying to get a list of applications to create hardening guides for. So we're not necessarily trying just to shame these applications, but really trying to prioritize what are we going to write hardening guides for. And in order to do that, one of the inputs we'll use to prioritize these applications is this survey. We have a nice yellow box on the right-hand side of the ISC website, or if you want to go there direct, it's isc.sans.edu/survey/4. That's just the number 4. This survey will only be one component, as I said, and for example, the 404 project will tell us what applications are actually being attacked. Then we have the honeypot that can help us with that too. We also get submissions, of course, about attacks that actually work and can make them thicker. And you probably noticed that I didn't say the top 10 most dangerous, something like this. How many applications we're going to pick really depends on the numbers. And I really want to wait for the numbers to come in. Whether it will be 5 is sort of my best guess, maybe 7 or so applications that we're going to pick. On the same note, the list you'll find in the survey, that's really right now more popular application, actually dangerous applications. If there's any application that we should add to the list, please let me know, and there's a field in the survey where you can note that, and I routinely keep adding these applications going through the survey. Already added a couple since I started it. One submitter actually also commented, well, why don't you just cut to the chase and call the browser the most dangerous application? Well, he got a point there. However, in order to exploit the browser, you need the vulnerable web application to actually deliver the exploit. So really, the two parts go together. Yes, we have a lot of problems with browsers, browser plugins, and just users clicking on software and installing it, but the vulnerable web application is usually the part that makes the exploit possible. Now we have a couple of other small news, a number of patches from Mozilla today. Thunderbird and Firefox got a new release. I mentioned Firefox 6 yesterday, but there's also a new version of Firefox 3. That's 3.6.20. If you still happen to use version 3, 3 is actually still maintained because it's the last version that supported some specific architectures. Anyway, this is it for today, so thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow.